Hello and very warm welcome to Digital India Podcast, where we talk to senior government official, enterprise leaders from across the country, from various sectors, where we try to understand how they are using technology, what kind of digital transformation strategy they are utilizing, and how they are actually working on these innovative projects. And today I'm joined by somebody who has spent more than 20 years as a technology leader, Ms. Kirti Patil, who is serving right now as a Chief Technology Officer at Kotak Mahindra Life Insurance. She's somebody who is very passionate about technology and also about women in technology, especially the STEM education for women. So, Ms. Patil, thank you so much for taking out time for this podcast.
Thank you so much for having me here. It is really my pleasure and honor to be here with you, Mohammed.
So, let me begin by asking you, if I have to ask you to describe the 20 plus years you have as a technology leader in a single metaphor, what would be that and why?
That is a very, very interesting question. Okay. Single metaphor. I think I would describe my journey in technology as charting a map through a dense, unexplored jungle where every step forward is both a risk and a revolution. I think in technology, you are constantly exploring uncharted territories, new frameworks, emerging technology, changing user behaviors, most of which no one's explored before. There is no blueprint. You really rely on instinct, experience, and the ability to learn fast. And the deeper you go, the more exciting it gets.
Right.
Because every discovery has the potential to reshape how people live, work, and connect. So I think it is like charting a map through a dense, unexplored jungle.
Given the fact that the kind of newer innovation and newer technology we see, I mean, within a year or two, you have something very new. So most of the territory will be completely uncharted. But what has been the most surprising twist in the journey so far?
It is very difficult to pinpoint one most surprising thing because I started my journey more than 30 years ago. At that time, implementing email in an organization was a surprise because it was unheard of then. But if I were to talk about some of the most recent things, when I did my engineering more than 30 years ago, we were taught the subject artificial intelligence. And so I knew it all along. But I think the way that technology has matured, the pace at which it has matured, and the way it is going to change the way we live and work, connect together, I think that is the real surprise element for me. How that has really evolved and how we will coexist along with that technology, I think that is going to be the biggest surprise for all of us.
Now, coming to the Kotak Life has undergone significant digital transformation since you joined in 2003. What strategy have you found most effective in modernizing the applications, some of the IT work that you are doing? Because most of the legacy organization would have invested a lot of money into an IT infrastructure which is already existing. And then you have newer technology like Kubernetes, microservice, AI, all those coming these days.
I think the strategy that we have adopted and that has really worked for us, I can put it down into four or five aspects. First is, I think what has worked very well for us is the phased modernization approach that we have undertaken. So we always adopted a phased approach. So introduce new systems and features incrementally.
Right.
So that allowed us to test it thoroughly, ensuring stability and preventing large scale disruptions. I think that is very, very important, a phase-wise approach. We also do a lot of pilots before we scale, because when we implement it on a smaller scale, we get that opportunity to learn, iterate, and improve. Okay. So if it doesn't work, then we can drop it rather than taking it to the next level and letting it fail. So what we also do is we do build monitoring and feedback mechanisms into the whole process so that we learn very early.
Right.
And the most important for any transformation to happen in an organization and for it to succeed, I think communication is key. We need to communicate with all the stakeholders what we are doing, what are the likely pitfalls or the potential impacts, and we need to manage the expectations very well. I can give us a few examples. So most life insurers in India are using a legacy policy admin system, and so are we. And when we wanted to modernize, we have to hollow the core, because we didn't want to take a big bang approach and just replace the core. So we said we want to hollow the core, but that hollowing the core also means a lot of things. Data out from the policy admin system into a database which can be used by other systems. And then we built this around applications. We started with policy issuance applications, then we moved to underwriting and so on and so forth. And I think that is the approach that we have continued to use till date. So even the three-tier architected applications, when we wanted to modernize, and you mentioned containerized applications, cloud-native applications, we took the same approach. Do it small and design well, because I think the architecture and the design is key to success of any application.
Absolutely. Now, let me ask you, when you are evaluating any technology deployment, what are some of the parameters that you look at in terms of whether you should be investing in it, whether you should be the first one to try, or would you rather wait to look at some of the use cases happening here and there in different markets, and then based on those feedback, would you like to emulate? How do you plan the imbibement of a newer technology?
So it is never about that we want to be the first mover or we want to emulate someone. I don't think that works, and that doesn't work for us for sure. So I think it starts with deep alignment to the business value that a particular technology is going to create. If a technology can enhance, for example, customer experience or improve efficiency or open new channels, it's worth exploring. So for us, it is the business value or the business outcome that comes first, because we are not a technology company, so we don't get carried away by the technology itself. The use of that technology to our business is the first thing that we check. So even if everybody else has used a particular technology, but we believe that this is not going to give us value, we may not pursue. But if there's a new technology which nobody has used, but if it is going to give us immense value, then we find it worth exploring.
Right.
Like I said before, we are exploring. And when we are exploring, we really want to experiment. And we experiment with pilots. Right. We experiment with small use cases. And once those are successful, then you technology teams get the confidence to move ahead. Business gets the confidence and sponsors get the confidence to sponsor such an investment. I'll give an example. We started our AI journey with conversational AI 6-7 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Even in that, we tested multiple use cases of the conversational AI. We tested with certain closed user groups internally, with certain customer sets. And only when we realized that this technology is mature, the way we have built it is good, and it is really delivering us the customer value, we went ahead with it. So I think being a first mover does not mean jumping in blind.
Right.
It just means being willing to test early, learn fast, and scale smart.
You mentioned conversational AI. What is your assessment, especially using of conversational AI as an omni-channel customer experience platform? Do you see in a tangible term it is happening or down the line?
It is absolutely happening. And I'll just again take you back when we implemented it 6 years ago. A couple of use cases, we added more use cases, and then COVID happened. And we did not even have to advertise this, because at that time, everybody was at home. Customers were at home, agents were at home. And this channel is very easy to use. And this was on WhatsApp. And everybody, including the customers, the distributors, they just started using this channel. So earlier, 25% of our service requests would get serviced through digital channels. And 75% through the traditional branch walk-ins or call center calling, etc. Now it is split. I think our 80%, if I'm not mistaken, of our services are handled through digital channels. And conversational AI on WhatsApp works very well. And we've added so many use cases here. It's not only for customers, but even to our distributors. And I think that has really changed the game, because you don't have to train internal teams. You don't really have to train the customers. It is so very intuitive.
One of the challenges that we observed during the pandemic, the empathy was missing, which basically you get it when you go into a branch kind of setup. In insurance, if you look at the number of connection is very limited, either at the time of onboarding or maybe at the time of renewal, or if there is a request of withdrawal or something happened, then only there is a connection between the organization and the customer. So if I have to ask you, as a technologist, how do you look at mapping the empathy part into the technology deployment? Are we able to do it? Can we experiment in a different way?
So, which is a very good question that you have asked. And it is important that we bring in empathy, because we are at the end of the day dealing with human beings. It's not a machine-to-machine conversation. But I think technology or efficiency that the technology brings in and empathy are not opposites. They can and they should coexist, because they are really complementary pillars of modern financial services. Technology gives us scale and speed, but what really makes it meaningful is how well we use it to understand and serve people better. We use the human in the loop logic, okay? so that customers and consumers feel that they are heard and not handled. So the responses that we give back, they should be empathetic responses. So how do we ensure we do that? So we use a lot of design thinking where empathy is at the core of what we build. And for that, we do a lot of focus group discussions with sometimes actual customers, definitely the consumers. We are with them to understand what are the challenges, what are their expectations, and we build the processes and the technology around that. So while they're served efficiently by the technology, they don't feel that they are shortcharged, okay, that a machine is handling it. And we also keep that human conversational option open. So because some of the modern organizations, there is no way to reach out to a customer service executive in those organizations. And many times as customers, you and I also feel very frustrated. So why we would say that 98% is all through technology, very efficient, but 2%, if you really want to talk to somebody, it's not that we are shutting you off because we have beautiful technology. I think that is how we do. So the two things I want to say here, we bring the empathy element in the technology solution, but we don't keep people right away from people.
One more thing I would like to understand from you. Whenever there is a project and you as a CIO, CDO, CISO, you implement it, and there might be some cases wherein something might not work. How do you manage this dichotomy of challenge in terms of when something is really not working out the way it was envisaged in the beginning?
So I think this challenge is for all CIOs or CTOs, not necessarily only because I'm a woman, I face these challenges. Again, this is a very good question because people don't ask about this. People want to know only about successes and what went well. So I'm happy that you are also asking me to talk about areas that are not really covered by everyone. So there is an emotional weight of transformation. I agree. There's excitement, no doubt, right? But there is also resistance. There is also fatigue. There are also moments of doubt. And tech leaders, as I mentioned earlier, have to champion a vision long before it becomes visible to others. So as CIOs, we deal with a lot of uncertainties. There are delayed outcomes, not so correct outcomes. And there is a pressure to deliver with 100% perfection all the time. And all this has to happen when you yourself perhaps are learning the terrain because it's a new technology. You may not have done it in the past. And the repercussions are on so many people. Now, if you will talk about the stakeholders, I think it is important that you need to communicate consistently. Stay transparent about the wins, transparent about the setbacks, but you also need to manage your teams because if something is not delivered to perfection, then their morale will be down and there is pressure from all over. So what I do to my teams is just remember why we are doing what we are doing. So purpose is very, very important. And I think if you know what your North Star is and you're focused on that, then you're grounded and you can overcome these challenges. The other P, which is important, is also progress over perfection. I think that is important for teams to know. And as a leader, my job to communicate that every time you may not succeed and it is okay to fail. I think that is what has worked for me and for many leaders. Now, coming to the challenge as a woman, right? Like I said, these challenges are common to anybody and everybody. But a woman leader perhaps is an additional challenge that many of the stakeholders would be men. I don't let gender come into my conversation with any of my peers or my team or you or anybody. And I think that is what women should do. So if you have enough knowledge and you're true to what you're doing, then you can overcome really any challenge that you may believe that the gender is putting on you.
Let me ask you one more thing before I let you go. Let's say if you would have not pursued a career in technology, your engineering path, what it would have been and why?
So I'm sorry. Interesting question again. I'm not going to talk about what I wanted to do when I was in school because when you're in school, you wanted to do so many things. I mean, I wanted to be an interior designer, then I wanted to be an architect, but those were really dreams, not really aspirations, if I were to call them that. But I think I would have been a teacher. And I started my career from teaching. I used to teach in an engineering college. I taught for 2 years and then I moved to the corporate world. I still would love to do that. If it was not engineering, but I would still love to teach something related to science because I am very scientific, logical, and I think I would have loved to teach that, but not theoretical teaching. Maybe use case study basis teaching and corporate or practical teaching or something like that. Would not only have loved to do that if I was not here, but if I get an opportunity, I would love to do that even today. More recently, I'm not been teaching technology or teaching science, but I do mentor girls who are pursuing STEM education.
Mm-hmm.
I would love to do that. Because you know, teaching children in school or college is what I would love to do more. That also gives me an opportunity to remain connected with the youth.
Absolutely. Ms. Kirti Patil, thank you so much for taking out time for this podcast. I think you spoke on most of the thing quite frankly and quite openly. So once again, on behalf of Tech Observer Magazine, thank you so much, ma'am.
Thank you very much. It was my pleasure to be here. And some interesting questions that you asked, which were not really technology related, that made the conversation even more interesting for me. Thank you very much.